This is from the Midwest City Free Baptist Church.
I start here with 1901. I mean, obviously we talked about all those old English Bibles back in England. We talked about the King James. I mean, remember that 1611 is the first publication of the King James. We're going back a ways. But in the 20th century, English Bible publication has been a bonanza. I mean, cranking them out. English Bibles. Lots and lots and lots of English Bibles. And what I have on this slide are a lot of the most popular, I guess. These are the highlights. So there are many more. But what I put on this slide in this publication timeline to kind of show you, oh, when they came along, starting, I should start at the beginning of the century. The American Standard Version. I'm sorry, that says KJV. That was just a mistake. It should be ASV. I give you the little acronym that their Bibles are identified in a lot of writings by their little letters, and so it's good to know what they are. A lot of times you see a quote, a Bible, you see a verse, and after it it might say TLB. You'll think, what's that mean? Well, it's the Living Bible. They'll use that shorthand to let you know which version that happened to be. So the ASV, so you have the American Standard Version in 1901. And then look at the jump from there to the Revised Standard Version, 1952. I bet some of you have been around long enough to know that the RSV was once very popular. Long ago, I don't know if anybody reads it today. I don't know if I ever see, know that it's in the hand of anybody. You know, anybody walking into church today with an RSV? Probably not too likely. It's one of them's RS, but that's telling too, because if someone's going to go to the trouble to print, a multilingual, a polyglot, whatever, one of these with the columns, it's interesting what makes the list, because that tells you if they're going to that trouble, the four that make it, it's a final four. I mean, like, they're important. So the RSV, that shows its prestige alone, that it's one of the columns. The King James is no doubt one of them. I mean, it's always going to be one of them. And then you probably got RSV. And what are the other two in yours?
NIV and Living.
NIV and Living. Now, what's interesting about that is you got the standard King James from the 17th century. Then you've got RSV. Remember our scale about more literal versus more dynamic equivalent. RSV is very word for word. Then you go way over to NIV, which is a lot more contemporary and thought for thought, and then of course Living is just paraphrase. So what's smart in a way about a Bible that does that is it's not just throwing you four different translations, it's throwing you four different types of translations, giving you four kinds of Bible, which allows you even wider, broader scope to see it. So the RSV was once very popular. And then along comes the Amplified Bible, which is, I think, a very early kind of paraphrase. I used to have an Amplified Bible. It just basically adds a lot more words. It just gets very wordy. It'll take a short verse and it'll just expand it. It'll be much more flowery and everything. I think it used to be fairly popular. The Jerusalem Bible was, I think, overseen by the Catholics. The Roman Catholic Church has had a long history of its own English Bibles that they print, most of which we don't know well. But I think the Jerusalem and the New Jerusalem had a lot more crossover value, like I see them in places, and I don't know for whatever reason. And the Roman Catholic Bibles, you might say, well, how are they different? They're not, translation-wise, they're not different. But they will typically include a few books that Protestant Bibles don't have. And those are known as the Apocrypha, which we talked about once before. They're just late Hebrew books. They're Jewish. They're authentic books. I mean, Jews wrote them. They're not, and there's nothing strange, too strange in them. I mean, like, there's nothing bizarre or heretical. Well, I say that. I mean, Bell and the Dragon. I don't know. Maybe a little bit bizarre. But mostly it's like, there's the history of the Maccabean revolt and stuff, historical things. They call them the Roman Catholics call them the Deuterocanonicals. Deutero, like secondary. Anyway, so Catholic Bibles. Well, then you have the New American Standard coming along in 1971. Now, over the course of years, I've always had a liking for the New American Standard as a study Bible. It's It's one of those that's really word for wordish in the way that, you know, they used the formal equivalents. They tried very hard to be accurate to wording, which makes the English of the New American Standard not too great always, but as a study Bible, it's really good. And look how early the Living Bible, same year, 1971, same year, the Living Bible, wildly popular, the Living Bible, wildly popular. So when I was a kid, I saw it everywhere. And we used it in classes and stuff. I mean, Sunday school class, they'd just break it open and use it. Really influential, and a paraphrase, no doubt, a paraphrase. And then you get the Good News Translation, and then there's the NIV right there, 1978. Of course... Well, it was listed, there was a separate listing for fragments or just New Testament, so...
So that's not the Good News for Modern Man.
No, I don't think it is. I think that's different. I remember Good News for Modern Man. It was almost like a... It wasn't leather-bound. It almost looked like it almost didn't look like a Bible. And by the way, occasionally they often will print Bibles that are made to not look like a Bible. Yeah, like it'll have a regular-looking paper cover. You know, it won't have that Bible look to it. It won't be bound in leather. It'll just, and it might have graphic designs on it, like God's Word to Man or something. And now that sounds like it could be a Bible, a title like that. But they used to hand out. I think Good News for Modern Man, correct me if I'm wrong, was partly meant to as an outreach Bible, if you will. Like in other words. It wasn't printed so much for the use of the faithful as to get non-Christians to pick it up and read it, so it wouldn't look big and imposing. I think that's because they used to hand them out. I think Billy Graham people and so on used to hand those things out.
There was another group like Navigators.
Yeah. Several organizations have done that sort of thing, and I think the American Bible Society does it too.
My Living Bible in the front says The Way.
Right. There's another name for you that's a little bit... If you're an outsider, you might not know that's... If you're a Christian, your ears can kind of... You know, you kind of have a sense that that's probably a Bible. That could be a Bible. But an outsider might not know that's what that is, so... As we'll sort of note in a minute, the printing of English Bibles is actually big business. I said last week that English has more Bibles than any other language. It's true. Part of the reason for it, there are a number of reasons for it, but one in a list of reasons is, I mean, hey, it's the U.S. has been the big market economy. Things that make money. We do more and more of. And frankly, English Bibles sell. So every publisher that can come up with new, different, creative, you know, kinds of Bibles, he knows that stuff will sell. He knows, you know, you don't print a bunch of books unless you think that there will be buyers for it. There will always be buyers for Bibles. And so,
and especially today when a lot of people want to learn English in foreign countries.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Missionaries will use Bible to teach English, obviously, because missionaries have as a chief goal, well, as a primary motive for teaching English, so that you can read the Bible. I mean, it's good anyway in other respects, but I mean, it's not like people who might want to. A lot of people want to learn English. In certain places in the world, it's beneficial to you to learn English for your future business and whatever, especially parts of Asia. So they figure, it helps me to learn English. Well, you can use a lot of different texts to learn English. But if you use the Bible, they're getting some... They're taking truth on board, you know, with the language. So, but you know, the NIV, of course, is such a monumental publication because of its influence. There's likely been no modern English translation that has sold like the NIV has. The NIV has been a big, big seller. And all of these will have newer versions. There's a new of everything you see. Like you look, as the timeline goes on, you see the word new a lot, don't you? So the new King James comes along in 1982. And like I said, there are several King James editions. I mean, there's like a dozen of them, maybe more. But the new King James is a big one. And then the New Jerusalem Bible in 1985, the New Revised Standard in 1989, the New Century Version in 1991, and there's a... Now, I have to make a note here about the New Living Translation. This is important to know. Sometimes you think, and I thought at first, that the New Living must be the Living Bible updated, like there's new everything else. It's New Living. It's not true. It's not really true. I think I read that it originally was going to be that. But it ends up being a legitimate translation, not just a rework of a paraphrase. So the NLT 1996 is a very competent... In other words, what was going to be originally, I think, according to plan, just an updated Living Bible, they ended up turning the project into a new translation with a whole team of scholars. So... The fact that the word living is in it, it's a different animal. Like I said, the old Living Bible is a paraphrase. The New Living Translation, now it's very contemporary and it takes that NIV type approach of thought for thought, but it's not, that's different from being a paraphrase. So the New Living is, I think it has some popularity. And then you see there in 2001 the English Standard, the ESV. You note that I use that quite a bit, you know. The Message is a very popular contemporary. Maybe in some ways it's replaced the Living Bible as the paraphrase du jour. That's what people like now. If you're going to use a paraphrase, now the Message is what you're more likely to see. It's this generation's Living Bible. And both of them are similar in that both of them were done by a single individual. So I think the Eugene Peterson who did the Message passed away only a couple of years ago, maybe. Canadian, I think. And then you have the Holman Bible, the Holman Christian Standard 2004. All right. And on account of my Southern Baptist DNA, I happen to know a lot more about how that came about, because a whole lot of Baptists were involved in it. I think it might have even been, I can't remember, but it might have been related to Lifeway Publishing, Broadman Holman is the Southern Baptist official press, Broadman Holman. So that's even in the name. And so then you have the New English Translation of 2005, and they keep doing it. And as I said, just so that you know, we have so many other Bibles. There are many, many English Bibles. Most of them, if I listed them, you'd say, I never heard of it. I never heard of it. That's an English Bible? I never heard of that. The reason is because, you know, so many of them, in a market that's flooded, so many of them just don't catch on, maybe, if you will. Or they're just not big sellers, or they were for specialized audiences or something like that. But over the decades, there were lots of them. Go and Google it up, English Bibles, and you're going to see. You'll see like 50 of them, whatever they list. There's actually more than that, but I think, you know, because they update and do, some of them are just slight revisions of others. And then of course, there are... some of them, all the actual words are the same, but they change the look. They add things. They'll put in devotions. They'll add images. They'll add enhancements or whatever. They'll tweak it. They'll change it. And that's not to mention all of the what they call niche Bibles or niche Bibles. Familiar with the word? Like a niche, like a niche, like a. It's targeted. It's aimed at a particular audience. And there are lots. In a few minutes, I'll show you. You'll be maybe surprised at just how many niche Bibles there are, where they're taking the NIV or taking the American or whatever it is, the New English, and they're aiming it at one target group. You know what I mean? Like a Bible for hikers. You know what I mean? I mean, really. The chess player Bible. I mean, you name it. And they take it and they market it that way. And then there are, of course, a lot of Bibles that are New Testament only or Gospels only. There are picture Bibles and story Bibles that we use for kids. Anyone ever use the picture Bible with your kid?
Deckermeyer's.
Yeah, and it's all laid out like a comic strip.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, there's that one too. Those are different, I think, right? There's picture Bible, and then there's... Is there another name I'm missing here? But
Deckermeyer's is more stories.
Yeah, storyboarded.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I don't...
They have bubble... they have bubbles of where they talk like in a comic book. It's, you know what I mean? When I was a kid, I remember those. So they print those for kids, obviously, you know. So, and... What's it like? Is it?
Well, it's an NIV, but it's in simpler language so that it's for young children so
okay.
they can understand it.
But it's based on the NIV, but yeah. they make it a little more for kids to be able to read?
It's simpler language.
Uh-huh.
A little bit simpler language.
Right.
When I buy Bibles for young children, I almost always buy an NIRV because it's pointless to give a child a Bible that they don't understand what they're reading.
Yeah. Give them the old King James.
Yeah. Well, even the NIV.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right.
For a second or third.
I mean, yeah, those aren't written. Those aren't to be read on a you know, on a second grade level. There are places you can look. There are some interesting websites that'll take where they. I don't know who's done this work, but you can look at every English Bible, or at least I guess a lot of the popular ones, and it'll give you all this layout. Like there's one I noticed that every time I'd click on a thing, it would be a big drop down expansive thing, and it would say. Here's who was behind it, who published it, the year it was published, blah, blah. And part of what we say is original audience, you know, native speakers, ages, whatever, or, you know, 10th grade reading level and up. Or like it. So there's a lot of analytics they actually do on these different Bibles. And undoubtedly there are bad translations too.
She got pretty disgusted one time in the Bible study where each one wanted to read from their translation. They had about six different translations
yeah.
in the Bible study. And she finally got disgusted. She's a Greek scholar. So she said, I'm going to bring my Greek New Testament. We're going to read the Greek.
Uh-oh. That's called one-upping everybody.
Something like that.
Yeah. I remember the guy, the gentleman in who I first took some Greek classes from. He taught down at OBU long ago. And I remember one time he did a chapel, and he walked down from the podium, was kind of, how you doing, shaking some hands or whatever, you know. And a couple of guys walked by, and they saw in his hand, well, he's just had a Greek New Testament in his hand. They said, well, now, that's what you used up there? Oh, yeah. It's like it doesn't occur to you that someone might be so proficient that they could just confidently ascend to any pulpit only carrying that and just go straight to their passage and kind of translate it on the spot as they read it. Now that's impressive. But now you see, that's the kind of person who sits on a good, solid committee to do this work. And in fact, he had been on a couple of those type committees. You know, because you want people who you feel like are extremely proficient to be able to do it. When you don't have that, why, this is where you have a good chance to have a flawed translation. I think you might remember long ago when we had a night when we talked about our friends and our friendly neighborhood Jehovah's Witnesses, and I said they carry a Bible that is their own, that's uniquely theirs. The Watchtower printed it. It's an English Bible, and they call it the New World Translation. And I think I said at the time, this is an extremely corrupted translation. And that's not just saying something mean and nasty. This is just an academic fact. Because, and why is it that way? Well, because the gentlemen who, the men who got together and did that translation weren't concerned with the original. They didn't really consult it. They were not great scholars in it. And so then you could... You know, any time translation is done purportedly by direct divine, you know what I mean, help. And when my friend Rob was here, he was talking about how that's how their prophet, quote, translated things. It's actually a misnomer. He actually never translated a thing. Because if translation is what we take it to be, which is somebody looking at one language and then bringing it into another language. He never did any of that, actually. We call it that. What he actually did is stare at, in one case where he actually had Egyptian documents, they weren't old enough to be what he said, but remember that Book of Abraham thing he told about? In that case, what he did is he stared at something he could never decipher. It was just simple. And the Lord told him directly what English words to write, straight to it, you know, like, The fact that they were there, was incidental almost. They're just almost props. In the other case of the actual Book of Mormon, it's questionable whether he even had what he claimed. He said there were golden plates. In that case, if there were no plates, then there's not even the prop. He's just looking in his hat, and God's showing him the next English word. That's kind of how that went. That's not translating, obviously. And so I wouldn't trust it. And you know, this brings up a good point, by the way, that I think it's important to say. There are those who are non-Christians, and maybe some Christians too, who misunderstand what it means that we have so many English Bibles, and indeed so many other translations. And what they wrongly think sometimes is that this is a weakness, or that this is a problem, or that this is something to worry about, or that this is something to be concerned about. Like, oh no, so many versions. Oh no, that must mean they're riddled with errors. We don't know who's right. How can I choose? You say this, he says that, you know? And they will be alarmed at the fact that we have so many. But hopefully you see, doing this study and understanding where they came from, there's nothing to be alarmed about. It's actually good that we have the freedom, and so many people have cared enough to study it so well and to come together and provide all these, so that it actually gives you its strength. It's a strength. What's weak is when everything is coming down to a trust issue with one human being. And that's what you have with the cult translations. It's like God said these unbelievable, wild things. They're either true or false, and it all comes down to that guy said. It all comes down to him. Because one guy said so. You got nothing to look at, nothing to check him out on. There's no recourse. Nobody can look. There's no text. There's nothing anywhere. It's just him saying, take my word for it. Me who came along thousands of years of the late, you know, me who came along after all the centuries had unfolded, I came along and God told me stuff he never told anyone else before. See, that now that is shaky. What we stand on, you know what I mean, because it's easily traced, because there's so much of it, it's really an embarrassment of riches. It's like I said about all those manuscripts. And in a sense, I think it's a similar conversation that you might have to someone that says, oh no, so many denominations, oh no, you know. Well, you can you can sometimes look at just a church that it says that it's one church. It's a, you know, and sometimes I think you certainly would get this argument sometimes from Mormons, and you might even get it from a Roman Catholic friend that might say, look, you people are like, woo, all these Protestant denominations, at least we just have one church. Okay, but all your chips are in on one. And maybe not. But, you know, it's like I said about the translation, in the council of many, right? There's more wisdom to be trusted and found in the council of many. And so I think it is a good thing we have these, just so long as we kind of understand where they came from, and we're discerning enough to know that when a really goofy one comes along, we can kind of see it for what it is. So so those are some good notes, I think, on these Bibles. So a few of those slides then that you saw last week. So we can move ahead just with a couple of them here. You might remember I showed you before. This one I had cut off last week, but I fixed it so you could see the actual top line there, see? And this just shows you how somebody, well, not just anybody, but somebody named Dr. Andy Wu of the Global Bible Initiative. So Dr. Wu has helped us out by giving a kind of a rating here to say different Bibles, you have what he's calling readability scores, or how readable is it? That is, how well does the English flow versus literal scores, like how tightly and strictly does it stick to the way the Greek is and Hebrew are constructed? And so what you see is, with a Bible like, for example, take, for example, the ESV and the NASB are good examples, where the literal score is higher, 68%, almost 68% on the NASB, and the readable score is a little lower. See? Because that's their emphasis. That's more word for word. But by contrast to that, look at the NIV, has a much higher readable score and a little lower on the literal score, because they're doing thought for thought. They're willing to they're willing to be a little looser on how they change the phraseology in order to make the English better. And then, of course, when you look at something like, let's see, which one has the, well, now they gave New Living the highest readability and the lowest literal. Right? And again, that's if they had the Living Bible up there or the Message, I would think it would be more like, 75 to 80% readable and 20% literal because of the differences between them. So let's see if I have a couple more of those slides that were from last week before. Let's look at this. I didn't show you this last time in case you're interested. This is just interesting information. Look at the preferred translations here. Preferred Bible translations. Whoever did this study, this is from summer of 2012. It's a little old now, but here it is. So NIV comes in with the biggest piece of that pie chart, 39%. Preferred Bible translations among the NAE, the National Association of Evangelicals. Okay? NIV with a whopping 39% slice of that pizza, and then the NASB, 20%. Then next is the ESV with a 13% slice of the pie. Then the New King James with 9%. And there's that New Living translation with 7%. And then the only other ones that even get a slice are, KJV, NRV. And then you've got a Spanish-speaking Bible. So they weren't just asking about English Bibles, right? And the CEB gets the 1%. That's the Contemporary English Bible. But you see, like I said before, the NIV, really popular, the old NIV. Here's another one for you. Here's another chart for you to look at. The bestsellers as of February 2015, the NIV is number one on terms of what sells the most, what they sell the most of. The New Living, number two, the ESV, King James, and New King James. Like, that's what people are buying, at least as of 2015. But let me show you some niche Bibles. You know what, like I said about the word niche, niche Bible means like it's aimed at a certain subgroup. It's aimed at a specific group of people. So you got your superheroes Bible there. That's the Surfer's Bible, New Testament. And of course, the Precious Moments Bible. And there's your sports devotional Bible. I got some more to list that I don't have up here. So, what's that? Let me tell you about some of the niche Bibles before I tell you about some of these. Some of the niche Bibles I didn't put on that screen. You got the Homeschool Mom's Bible, the Duck Commander Faith and Family Bible, the Play to Win Hockey New Testament, the Waterproof Bible, the American Patriots Bible, America. You got the Busy Mom's Bible. There's an Emergency Medical Services Bible. There's an Extreme Teen Study Bible. Not if you're a teen, but you're an extreme teen. You got the Green Bible, if you're environmentally sound. You've got the Prophecy Bible, the Bug Collection, the Bible, the Law Enforcement Officer's Bible. Now, sometimes you have things that are called a Bible. It's just a manual for that thing. But I think these are actual supposed to be Bibles. The Outdoorsman's Bible, the Everyman's Bible, the True Love Waits Bible, Baby's First Bible. It's like you chew on it, I guess. I don't know. You got the Bernstein Bears Holy Bible, the Masonic Bible, the Coast Guardman's Bible, the Golfer's Bible, the Poverty and Justice Bible. That's if you're really woke. You read the Poverty and Justice Bible. Now let's look at those paraphrases again, Jeremy. You guys are good. Now this is where it really gets wild. So again, paraphrases. Not so much just translations, but like somebody decides to put it in their own words. And boy, again, in the world of English Bibles, I mean creativity, you name it, somebody has come up with an English Bible, even if it's a broad paraphrase. But like the Cotton Patch Gospel was actually very famous. You've heard of that one probably. And that guy actually was something of a scholar. He was actually a scholar. A lot of these other people that did some of these Bibles were not scholars. And I'm going to read you some samples of a few of them. So just bear with me here and listen to a few selections from a few of these Bibles, okay? So you see the Street Bible right there? So I think I mentioned it last week, but In the Street Bible, this was done by a guy named Rob Lacey. And in the Street Bible, in John chapter 3, he talks about the guy that we all know as John the Baptist, or John the Baptizer. But here's how he says it. It's at the title, the little subtitle he puts over chapter 3 in the Street Bible is, the title of it, that chapter is, Crazy Johnny, the Desert Wild Man. And it says this. This is it, chapter 3. Back in the day, there was a guy who hung out in the desert named Crazy Johnny. And Crazy Johnny told everybody the same thing. He said, you are a sick puppy and your life is messed up. So admit this to yourself and God so that you can start turning your life around before it's too late. Because Johnny was blunt like that. That's Jeremy shaking his head. You know you're going to run out and buy this and start doing all your devotions from it. Next funeral, ceremony, anything you get called to, I want you to break out the Street Bible on them. So, but here it gets better. Now, are you ready to hear a passage from the Hillbilly Bible? You guys are going to love this one. This is from the Hillbilly Bible, okay? I know I got to hurry up here, but we got to get this in. So this is also about John. Okay, same kind of idea. This is also about John the Baptist. From the Hillbilly Bible, it says this. Hang on, actually, yeah. But this is from John chapter 1 where it starts off. Here it is. It says, now, there was a feller. I'm reading it exactly. Now, there was a feller that come from God, and his name was John. And that there feller come to tell folks about the shining light so everybody could believe in him. He wasn't this here light himself, but he came to tell folks about the light. The light shines on everybody, and the light had up and come right here into the world. He come up into the world, even though we made everything, we didn't even pay him no mind. He come to see his folks, and we didn't let him in. But the ones what did let him in and put their trust in him, he let him just up and become sons of God. Youngins not born the usual way with mamas and daddies, but born of God. And this here word became a man and lived right here with us for a spell. We seen how shiny he was, the shine of the only son of the good Lord ever had, full of grace and truth. Now, John told folks about him and commenced to hollering, saying, this here's the one I was talking about when I says this feller comes after me, really come up way before me, so he's better than me by a country mile. And we just keep on getting heaping helpings of grace from him. Because all the rules about what's right and wrong come by Moses, but grace and truth come by King Jesus. Ain't none of us ever seen God, but we seen this here, Son of God. And now we kindly know what God's like. Now this here's what John told him when the religious folk come a-calling to see who he was. He told them straight up, I ain't the king you're looking for. And they asked him, well, then who are you? Are you Elijah? And he says, I sure ain't. And they says to him, reckon you're the prophet? Nope, he says. And then they says, well, who are you then? So as we can go and tell on you to them fellers that sent us. What do you have to say for yourself? And then John commenced to preaching from Isaiah, saying, I'm a feller hollering in the country. Y'all step aside and make way, because the Lord's a-coming. Amen! Amen. That's the Hillbilly Bible. All right. Now, are you ready for the Black Bible Chronicles? For the Black Bible Chronicles. I'll try not to put on too much black sin here. You know, I don't want to sound like Hillary at the black church, but so here's a little passage from the Black Bible Chronicles talking about this is just the very beginning from Genesis 1. It says, now when the Almighty was first down with his program, he made the heavens and the earth. The earth was a fashioned misfit. It was so uncool and dark, but the Spirit of the Almighty came down real tough so that he simply said, hey, lighten up. Now, this is another good passage about Noah. When he comes down to tell Noah what's wrong with the world? He says, I'm fed up, Noah, with what's happening around here. These folks ain't what's happening anymore, and I'm going to do something. I'm going to do what I got to do and end things once for all. I'll tell you right now, man, I'm going to blow these brothers clear out of the water. That's the blood. All right. And here's from the Aussie Bible. This is from the Aussie Bible, okay? And this is from Luke chapter 5. Okay, you ready for the Aussie Bible? I know John's ready. He's like, bring it! Bring the Aussie Bible! Okay, I'll do the best I can with this. He says, so one day a bunch of lawyers was hanging around listening to Jesus. And they come from every township in Galilee. And the big smoke. And God gave tons of power to heal all the sick. And then blow me down, some blokes were trying to get the paralyzed mate on a stretcher to Jesus. But it was like a grand final crowd that day, and they couldn't barge through. So they dragged the mate right up on the stretcher on the roof. And they yanked off a few tiles, lowered him smack in the middle of the room. And Jesus saw how much trust in him there was. He said to the paralyzed bloke, old chap, your sins are all forgiven. And the lawyer sneered and said, This boofhead, I guess that's Australian, this boofhead thinks he's God. Only God can forgive man's sins. But Jesus knew what was going on the inside of their noggins. And he says to him, so what do you think? You think? That's what you think, eh? Just watch this. Which is easier, to say to the bloke, your sins are forgiven, or to say to him, you're cured and get up and walk? Now this ought to show you that I have the power to forgive sins. And he turned to the paralyzed bloke. And he says, hop up, pick up your stretcher, and go home. And straight off, the bloke stood up, picked up his stretcher, and the crowd parted in front of him like the Red Sea in front of Moses. And he set off for his home, saying how terrific God is. And everybody was staggered. And they said, well, starve the lizards. How about that? Somebody did a whole Bible out of emojis. Well, look, I mean, like I said before, there's no other language with this much wild and crazy creativity in it. And the reason is because, first of all, we've got a free market. It's wide open. Bibles always sell. So anyone who comes up with any new Bible, any creative Bible at all, they'll print it and it sells. What about for you, though? Look, the point in all of this from the start was just to say there are a lot of good translations. You don't have to fear it. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to say, oh no, I'm vexed. One of them's right. No, it's not that one of them's right. Several of them are right. There's lots of them that are plenty good. You don't have to worry about it. However, like I said before, there should be times. Some people say, which Bible should I study? Study more than one. I mean, in the times that you really want to understand a passage, I mean, you really want to dig in and understand it, get yourself a few of them. Some people say, which one should I memorize? Memorize whatever you think sounds good. I mean, there's like some stylistic options here. You know what I mean? There's some room for, if there's a verse you're going to memorize and it means the same thing in five translations, but one of them you just like the way it sounds, memorize it the way you like the way it sounds. I mean, if all things are equal and it means pretty much the same thing. So there's no need to overthink it. The biggest problem that most of us have in the world, including Christians, isn't, well, I just can't find the right translation, or I'm just too confused about translations. It's that we just don't have the time. We don't make the time. We just don't do it. We just don't read. And sometimes, the fact that there's too many Bibles and I don't know which one, it can be an excuse for us to just to never take the time. I mean, so whatever you've got, I bet it's pretty good. And if you think, well, I'd like to try another one, you can get them pretty cheap. And anymore, there's so many apps that are free that, you know, you don't even have to worry about paying a lot of money anymore. But of course, this just helps us understand. It's another piece in the long history of the book, of the Bible we read, that we can know that it was revealed, that it has been preserved, that it's been translated really well by people who you can trust. They really know what